Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hadley and welcome once again to the Viewfinder podcast. Joining me on this week's show is Kevin Spiritus, the co-star, co-writer, and co-creator of the six-time Emmy Award-winning drama After Forever, which has just premiered its third and final season on Amazon Video. Kevin, welcome to the show, and it is truly an honor to be chatting with you today. I am so excited to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Very welcome. It's my pleasure. Now, for those not familiar with After Forever, what is the show about and what can audiences expect in its third and final season?
Well, the story is about love, loss, and new beginnings. The story is about two men in their early 50s who have everything in life until one day, spoiler alert, one of them dies of a very rare form of cancer. And my character, Brian, is then seen trying to navigate his journey of grief, how he deals with the loss, how he deals with moving on through life. And it's something that we all go through. It happens to be told through two men who are in love. But the gay thematic storyline is really about loss, so it can apply to anybody who's dealing with loss.
You play, of course, Brian, whose husband, Jason, which is played by Mitchell Anderson, of course, passes away from cancer, and you struggle to deal with his loss while trying to move forward. Yep. Tell me more about that character, as well as the others who are part of the show's story and the actors who portray them.
Okay, so my character, Brian Stone, is married to a gentleman by the name of Jason Adams, and they're together about 15 years. And at this moment in time where we catch them, the show is also told in a non-linear fashion. There's a lot of flashbacks. There's a lot of moments where we use the idea of me, Brian, walking down the street, talking to Jason, who is already passed, as a sort of like conjured him up, almost like he's a ghost. But I talk to his ghost. I talk to this entity as if he's still there, because I'm trying to work out the issues that I'm dealing with that have been brought up by his loss. There's a group of friends who are supportive of me, and there's a group of friends who are trying to move me forward and to trying to support my moving forward. Oh, my little cat just jumped up. I have a cat running around the house there. Oh, new house, and she just jumped up. Anyway, so Brian says he wants to move on. Brian says he has to move on, and he's ready to move on. Yet things that he shows in the first and second season especially is he talks about Jason ad nauseum. He's still very much hooked into Jason. And season three, this final season, picks up a month after season two, where my character is given breakup papers, so to speak. My character Brian is seeing somebody, and David, the character who I'm seeing, says, you're not ready. You still talk about Jason right and left, and you will never be ready to move on unless you let go of Jason. So it puts my character, Brian, into a spin. And I finally break down to the suggestion of many of my friends, is I get therapy. So therapy is every episode in season three, there's a session of therapy with the incredible therapist played by Linda Pearl, who plays Dr. Evelyn Meyer. And she is an incredible, incredible actress. And she and I are friends to begin with. So that was sort of like a wonderful way to kind of work that those scenes out. Yeah. And Brian eventually finds a way to not remove Jason from his life, but to move on from Jason and to carry him with him in a very healthy and respectful way, I guess you can say it. There is life after grief, and that's what Brian learns.
Besides yourself and Mitchell and Linda, you mentioned the character David. Who plays him and who plays the rest of your friends?
Well, David is, if you haven't watched season one and season two, I urge everybody, not for any other reason that it'll catch you up and put you in a better position to understand what's going on in season three. Mike McGowan plays David in season two. And he's actually the blind date I'm set up with at the end of season one. So he kind of comes throughout season one and season two. And you have to find out where he fits into season three. See, there's my friends, Paul and Paul. They own a restaurant. There's Paul One, who we call Paul One's Jameson Stern, and Paul Two is played by David Dean Bottrell. We still have returning Katie Huffman, who plays the role of Lisa Henson, and she is actually Jason's best friend from college, and her husband, Robert Emmett Lunny. There's a really, really great character arc between Lisa and Brian, because they both fight and they fight for the attention of Jason, and who deserves more attention from Jason while he's alive, and how they deal with him when he's gone. So there's a real wonderful wrapped up storyline with that as well. Jason's parents are played by Anita Gillette and Lenny Wolpe, and they return, and you know, they have a say in it as well, because they've lost their son, but they still have, quote unquote, a son, me, in their life. And they say, you know, we still have you. But everyone's dealing with loss on their own terms. And it's never easy. It's never easy. And grief has no roadmap, has no direction or guide that says, if you get to this part of grief, you're fine. Turn left and then keep going. You know, none of that. None of that. It's.
How did you personally identify with the character of Brian? And in what ways did your own experiences with grief and loss inspire your performance in After Forever?
First of all, when I met Michael Slade, my collaborator, I had just finished working on Days of Our Lives for about 7.5, almost 8 years, actually. And Michael saw me at a gym in New York City and basically came up to me and said, hey, are you Kevin Spiritus? Because if you are, I used to write for you on Days of Our Lives. And I joked with him, like, great pickup line. But it started a conversation for the two of us. I'd never met him before. And sure enough, don't ask me why I brought it up to him. I was just ready to talk about new content and new story, and digital was coming in. And I said, you know, we should write something together. And he said, no, I'm okay, really. And I said, no, we should do something digital. And sure enough, I want to do something about gay men who are not 30. And he said, what did you say? And it looked like I had pulled something out of his head. And he said, call me, we should talk about this. So he had been thinking about something that on those terms as well. Second of all, once we started to sit down and work together and write, and he had asked me what kind of show that I wanted to create, I said, I really wanted to do a dating type show, because I, at 51 at that time, was single, looking for love. And, you know, as a gay man, I thought that the dating process was completely horrible. It was all very much about apps and, you know, being set up by other friends and no shows and dates that went sour and south and all that stuff. So he said to me, well, why is it you think you don't have a relationship right now? And I said, well, who knows? It's not time for me to have that relationship yet. How about you? And he said, I lost my partner of 15 years about a year and a half prior to our meeting. And I said, I'm very sorry to hear that. Do you still talk to him? Don't ask me why that came out, but it did. And he said, I do. Like, I pulled something out of his head again. And, you know, this is a very unique story, and not unique to this situation, but a lot of people still talk to the people who they've lost. When you lose a person in your life, the relationship doesn't end. And that's something that Michael and I both really, really wanted to express, is that the love never ends. The love never dies. It's still there, and you miss that person. So he said, yes, I do talk to him. I said, what if we use that as part of a story, if he was okay with using it, as a way to have Brian's character deal with his grief and navigate through his trials and tribulations about loss. And he could conjure him up at times. And Michael had expressed to me that he was willing to, at that time, kind of creatively work through that. So that's how that got created. And your question was, have I dealt with loss on certain levels? In the late 80s, early 90s, during the AIDS epidemic, yes, there was quite a bit of loss I had dealt with. During the pandemic, there was quite a feeling and dealing with loss for many people. But for me, I have never lost a, I guess I can say, a loving partner. No, let me back that up. I have not lost a person who I have been close with intimately in the sense of a relationship. I've lost grandparents. I have lost friends, but never a lover, never a husband. I have, however, lost a collaborator named Michael Slade. During the end of season one, when we had just launched it onto Amazon Prime in 2019, Michael called me up and told me he had been diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, you think it's a joke at first. You kind of hear the words, and then you go, okay, well, what do we do now? Do you want to stop writing? Do you want to stop working? Do you want to get, what's your prognosis? Blah, blah, blah. Michael said he was told he was going to kick this and it was going to be fine. He was going to be all right. And that he wanted to keep working. Otherwise, cancer would win. So I said, great. You let me know anything I need to know. It won't be like I'm going to stop the world and not take care of you. If you need help from the West Coast, he was living in New York. So Michael actually rallied for about, I'll say a good 3.5 years. We wrote season two and three back to back in the hopes to doing it together, you know, shooting them together. We couldn't get everyone scheduled together. So that put season three on hold until we could get to it after season two. And just as season two was online and doing very well, COVID hit. And so Michael's health was starting to spiral down a little bit. And we had we had season three to continue, but we just didn't do it until after. Well, we chose not to have the regulations of rewriting the story. We didn't want to ruin the integrity of how we'd set up the seasons before. So we didn't rewrite it to have two people per scene in a series that had groups and friends and whatnot. So due to the pandemic, we actually shelved season three. And it was at that time that Allison Lenore, our producer, said, you know, why don't you try and do something to keep us current? And maybe we can do some, you know, one camera story where we can send the camera to people, you know, and do an interview type storytelling thingy with them, you know, something that would keep us all current and deal with the pandemic. So we had this wild idea to have Riley, played by Finn Douglas, who is a kid in the storyline. Finn's character is Riley, who is given the assignment to write about or to talk about his favorite person, most unforgettable person ever. So it was Riley's unforgettable school project. So we then went to send cameras to everybody's house all over the country, in New York, in Canada, in Connecticut, and interview them on quote unquote camera, telling a story about their favorite thing, their most least favorite thing, and their favorite story about Jason. So the only person not in that particular episode was Jason, and we talked about his loss. So that kind of moved us through the pandemic. And it was at that time that Michael really, really sort of spiraled down, and we lost him to his cancer. So my dealing with loss was kind of this life imitating art thing. It was very, very weird, very unbelievable. Here, Michael and I had this opportunity of creating a story that we both were contributing to about loss. And then I'm given this opportunity to now test it. So it was too weird. So anyway, until the pandemic ended, until we got a space of time that was clear enough to shoot season three, we got it done. Now it's done. So Michael wasn't there in life, in as I like to say, in the body, but he's been there in spirit. We had already written this season, and every episode, as I said, deals with me, my character, going to therapy. And there was a lot of me working out Michael as Brian was working out Jason in therapy as well.
How do you and the rest of the show's cast and crew honor Michael's memory, not just in making all episodes of this final season of After Forever, but also in the work that you did in bringing these episodes to life on screen?
Wow, that's a good question. I've been doing these Instagram lives with a lot of the actors and the director. One thing I've asked them is, what did After Forever give you? And they all say Michael. Everyone says Michael. I say Michael. I could have been on the moon that day, and Michael would have walked by me and said, I think I used to write for you in Days of Our Lives down on Earth. I think we all loved the truth that Michael stood for, that he had this ability to take the story that we were telling, and he's an incredible wordsmith. He was an incredible wordsmith. And though he and I created a lot of the scenes together and figured out what the story was going to be, Michael's words were the Holy Grail. As for me, there's a bit of anger still that I have, having to, it's bittersweet anger. I'm sad that Michael's not here, that he's not going to get to see this in reality. I know he'd be most proud of us, but I've had to do a lot of this work myself this final season to get it ready, and prepared for Amazon Prime, screenings, interviews. I owe my journey as a writer to Michael. Michael actually gave me the opportunity to work through a character and dramatically express myself in a way that I don't think any other character or any other show up to this point has been able to do for me. The soap is a very specific, animal. But he saw what I could do in Days of Our Lives, and I think he took it and elevated it to a place that I not only got to show my true talent, but was able to express myself freely, and for that I'm forever grateful.
And having seen all 8 episodes of the last season, you really gave it your all in the scenes that you did, especially with Mitchell. Tell me about how you worked on those scenes and what you were feeling as you were working on those scenes.
Well, it depends on, there's a lot of different elements to season three. There's happy moments with Brian and Jason. There's happy memories, and there's also there are moments where Mitchell's character Jason is sort of like, you're ignoring me, you know, and this is all going on in Brian's head, of course, you know, all these conjured up storylines, moments are in Brian's head. So, you know, for a person to have a conversation with himself, so to speak, but it's taking a form by two people talking it. You know, you're ignoring me because it's not about you anymore. It's about me. You know, there's one of these lines, I yell at him in the street. And it's the first time you actually see Brian's character not only talk to Jason in front of someone, because the therapist says, you know, if Jason were here right now, what would you say to him? So here's an opportunity for Brian to actually talk to Jason in front of somebody. And, but you see the unraveling of Brian and his journey. And he gets so angry at times. It's in his head. Jason's so in his head, so loud in his head, that he's screaming at him on the street, you know, saying, leave me alone. Stop it. It's not about you. And then he realizes he's by himself and people are walking by watching him. So Mitchell Anderson is an incredible actor. He was my first choice to bring him into this story. We had never worked together as younger actors in Hollywood. He had left Hollywood to go work in Atlanta and open up a couple of restaurants at Metro Fresh in Atlanta. Go there. It's delicious food. But the thing about Mitchell is Mitchell and I are good friends. We're close friends. And there was just this ease and ability to sort of like just sink into each other. There's a couple of moments in therapy, in the therapy scenes, where I really let Mitchell's character have it when I'm talking to him. And I just waiting for the noise to walk by. I know that it was not just Brian yelling at Jason. There was Kevin yelling at Michael. There was Kevin yelling at an ex-partner. There was Kevin yelling at a past situation. And, you know, all this was sort of thrown into these therapy sessions. And that, it's how I kind of wrapped up my own grief, dealt with it, my anger. Dealing with that was therapeutic. And it was also a bit challenging at times. So, you know, he was great to work with. Mitchell was always great to work with. Having had this trajectory without Michael and his loss would have been fine with me. I would have been very happy to have Michael here. But there was something sacred about everybody, from the director, Jennifer Pepperman, showing up. Everybody on set knew that we had something else to speak to other than the script. But Michael's legacy was interwoven into all of this work that we were doing. And I think everybody, there's a line that Lenny Wolpe's character says is Jason's father. He says, it all stinks, but you know, that's what it is. We got to move on. And it does. It stinks. It stinks that Michael's not here, but he's here on a great level. He's here in heart. He's here in spirit, and he's here on the page. You know, he gave his incredible, incredible work to live up to.
I say you definitely have lived up to that work.
Oh, well, thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Considering that the third season of the show was filmed post-pandemic, and considering all of the challenges that you and your team faced in getting it out there, what was the production process like, and how were you and the rest of the show's producers able to film each episode while also ensuring the safety of yourself as well as the cast and the crew?
By the time we got to filming, we were on the tail end of the pandemic's necessary rules and regulations. You know, everybody had to be tested. Everybody had to be regulated on a daily basis. And, you know, had anybody become COVID positive, we would have had to shut down. I mean, that would have been the kicker. But everyone was healthy and safe, and we followed the regulations. It was more expensive this season than any other season, because after COVID sort of lifted, everything became available to do and to work through and to rent, and everyone upped their prices. It sucked that for 2 years people didn't work, and then when they could work, the prices went up. So not only was it a costly season emotionally, it was a costly season figuratively. And but you know, we did what we did. I raised the money, I got people to support us, and sure enough, I couldn't have done the series. I want to give a shout out to Laura Barquette. Laura Barquette is the friend of mine whose five-story townhouse we use in New York City. Her late husband, Keith Barquette, was my he was in my class at school in high school in St. Louis, Missouri, and I had never met Laura while he was alive, but through incredible universal moments, once again, our paths crossed, we became friends, and she became so supportive of the series that she's actually one of the producers of it, and she helped create the incredible home and spaces for everyone in that series, because every single one of her rooms in that townhouse is used. I call it the Barquette Studios. So thank you, Laura. I love you, and I'm grateful that you've been able to take this journey as well.
Allison Vanor also did an amazing job producing this show, as did Rob Gokey with the music.
Yeah, yeah. Rob Gokey is incredible with the music. Allison and Robert, a couple, they travel with their dogs. They, you know, they make sure that they can bring the dogs along. Allison is... you know, she's going to run a major movie studio at some point very soon, I'm sure. From the very beginning, when I met her, I said, I'm going to ask you a million questions, and you're going to get really sick and tired of me asking these questions, but I won't understand it until I understand it. She goes, no problem. And she listened to every one of my questions. She listened to every single one of my complaints and fears, and watched me work it out. And she goes, why don't you just take care of the acting and I'll take care of the technical stuff and we'll make it all work out. She did a great job. She pulled together an incredible, incredible team. She really did. And Rob Padgett, who was also a producer this year on the series, he's always done an incredible job with the editing and the color and the sound. And he's... I probably have learned the most from him through all three seasons, just watching how he works, watching what it is we need from an editor. And he and I have a very similar style. So I would watch how he would take care of his process and how he would, it's like a math problem for Rob Padgett to figure out some stuff other than the technical stuff. Yeah, this color needs to match that color over here, but this is why this edit is chosen, because this person wouldn't say this until such. I mean, I just love watching him work. That's it's amazing.
The series has an incredible supporting cast made up of talent from stage and screen. What was it like working with them, and what did they bring to the table in terms of their portrayals of their characters in the show?
Well, I think everybody who read these scripts from the very get-go just knew that there was something else other than it being a script about someone dying and someone having to grieve. I don't know if it's from the title. I don't know if it's from their experiences that they've had. But I think everybody just showed up ready to play the game. They were always ready. And there was never a challenge for anybody to jump in and do the work. That was period. From Katie Huffman, Tony Award winner from Broadway, to Anita Gillette and Lenny Wolpe and Jameson Stern. Everybody had their way in to understanding and feeling this show. And I don't know, it felt like we all had freedom at the same time to jump in and do what we do. How would we react? Someone asked me the other day in another interview, did I know it was going to be the success it had become? And I have to speak honestly, on a certain level, I did know it was going to be that. I did know it was going to become this thing that people would talk about and people would respond to and people would have an emotional connection to. At the same time, you never know what's happening while it's happening. And we were at the screening. It was at the end of season one screening. And I'm in the back of the house. I'm with Michael. And we're standing against the wall. And we're watching the credits roll up. And, you know, this is just about the moment before the lights come up and everyone comes outside. We have wine and mingling and talking. And I looked over at Michael and I said, did we do that? Like, I couldn't believe what I was just witnessed. I'd seen the whole thing on this huge screen. And I said, did we do that? And he looked over and he just smiled. Yeah, we did. And he had tears in his eyes. And I just remember we did something that was from our hearts, that was personal to us, and that we knew what it was supposed to be. And that's sort of where we kept going from and always started at, you know, at that place. So I'm grateful for that.
It's not only touched audiences, but it's also won numerous awards, including 6 Daytime Emmys.
Just 6, but who's counting, really? The interesting thing is it's won the GLAAD Award. It's won several indie series awards, the Emmys. This year, there's something new that's actually happening for us. We are no longer in the daytime category. We are now in the primetime category, short form for primetime. So we're all kind of, I don't know, I'm complimented, yet I'm like, we're in the middle of all that prime time. My gosh, help see us. Look, we're over here, you know. So hopefully it'll pay off, you know, in a different way.
As both an actor and a filmmaker, and as someone who's had his own struggles and experiences with loss, what have you taken away, not just from making After Forever with Michael and your amazing cast and crew, but also from playing this remarkable character in Brian that we've watched for 3 seasons?
I've asked this of other people. I've gotten closer to my truth. Brian has this whole arc about, you know, something happens, then there's denial, and then there's the working through of this incredible emotion called grief. And what I have learned through this is that grief does not go away. It sort of, it ebbs and flows. It runs out to the field sometime, and it comes right back to you, you know, as you're crossing the street. There's no end to it. It's something that becomes part of you, and there is something that you have to make peace with, that it's not going to end. And there are days that it is triggered and it is more, it's more in your face than you could ever want it to be. And then there's days, maybe weeks, maybe months, that you're just breathing easily. You're at a baseball game. You're enjoying kids at a carnival. You're at a movie. There's a romantic moment between you and another person. And then, bam. I can't tell you how it works because no one does. No one knows. There's no roadmap. There's no set of directions. But the thing that I have been able to hold on to is that that's okay, that we all go through it, and that that's part of our life. That's part of our existence, is that we are going to have moments of grief, and they're going to come and flow. There's a line that Michael says at the end of his speech at the Emmys in 2019, there is life after grief, and you can learn how to go on with your life and still have the love for the person you've lost and still have a great life. And we gave that line to the therapist at the end of season 3. It's really quite beautiful.
And that's what After Forever is all about, just finding the ways to move on and to do it respectfully of those we've loved and lost.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you hope audiences take away from watching After Forever? Not just older people in relationships, but also those who've lost loved ones and who've tried to find closure while at the same time honoring their memories.
Well, just that. I mean, there's love in the details. There's excitement that falls through the cracks. As we get older, I think that we really, really comprehend what it is to have story that is about the middle age. So often the middle age, or the age between 30 and 60 and 70, is never experienced or written about on the canvas of any storytelling, whether it's gay or straight. And, you know, we are all here on this planet together. We all have important lessons and important stories to go through and tell. We're all going to experience loss. You cannot escape it. How you deal with it is a choice. And, you know, there are the stages of grief, and there are the stages of loss and death and all that. I think when we are at our most vulnerable, it sometimes feels like there'll never be another beginning, another day could come after that, this horrible loss. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's going through that very, very, very uncomfortable and very uneasy, messy, and I'll say even ugly energy that gets you and brings you to the other side. So for anybody who's watching this series, I think, and it's important to sort of see the whole season 1, 2, and 3, the whole trilogy, if you will, but you get to season 3 and you see where Brian has, he's still a little reluctant, but he's still able to raise his head and look forward and move forward. And don't doubt that, because I know from my own experiences of grief, I've had, and I've had some, but, there is life after it, and we all can go on from it. We all can heal ourselves and move forward, and then help the others who haven't been through it yet, you know.
Absolutely. Finally, what projects, if any, are you working on right now?
I'm working on a romantic comedy. I'm actually working with a new writer, a friend of mine, we're creating this time travel. It's sort of like a gay time travel love story, and I'm very excited about it. My friend Gregory Allen and I are creating this magical story based on a short story that he had written called Destiny on the Tracks, and I don't know if that's going to be the same title, but it is about time travel and finding love and how everything is happening at the same time and quantum physics. And it sounds more technical than anything, but it's a blast to write and to create. And it gives me an opportunity to not have to wear a veil the whole time, you know, a heavy handed veil of sadness, but yeah. I'm happy.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the Viewfinder podcast today to talk about season 3 of After Forever. It's an incredible show. I highly recommend it to our listeners. I wish you and your team all the very best with this last season, which could very well mean a trip back to the Emmys, given how incredible a job you and everyone involved with the show did with it. Congratulations again, and it was great to chat with you about it.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. That's the Viewfinder podcast for this week. I'm Chris Hadley. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, please stay safe, everyone.